Good morning. Let's get straight to markets.
Take a look at the impact for the indices.
Factual. Succinct. All you need to know before your trading day starts. Subscribe to our newsletter, CNBC's Daily Open.
Beyond the Valley. Hello and welcome to Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the world of tech. I'm Tom Chitty and with me is CNBC's senior tech correspondent, Arjun Karpal. Can China reach Chiptopia? Not a paradise filled with French fries, though that does sound good, but rather a country able to produce its own advanced semiconductors. Despite US sanctions, China are on the path to developing next-generation chips, but Beijing still face major challenges to become self-sufficient in the semiconductor industry.
Beyond the Valley.
Do you like that intro?
Really love that intro, Tom.
It's a
French.
Bit Partridge.
Yeah, it is a little. French fries. That sounds fantastic. What's your condiment of choice?
Ketchup.
With fries.
Yeah. For a dip, ketchup.
Yeah. Ketchup. Mayo.
Is it?
Mayo.
You're one of those wrong-uns.
Yeah. No, I mean, sometimes I really like mayo and, you know, a spicy sauce, like a chili sauce as well.
And then you mix that
in. Together.
Yeah.
It is a killer combo.
Yeah, nice.
But unfortunately, that's not what we're talking about today.
No, it's not. But it's good to be back after a week off. How was your week last week, not having Beyond the Valley?
Yeah, week was good. It was busy, of course. Lots of tech news. But yeah, there was a lot going on. I'm off to a show next week. Called Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. Biggest mobile industry show in the world. So, been prepping for that.
Mm.
Lot of work. What about you? How was the vacation? Feel rested?
As you can be with, a long haul flight back and the time difference for three young children. They fell asleep about 20 minutes before we landed back in London, which was great. So, you know, it was just absolute chaos. But as you'd expect, there was a bit of, controversy on the beach as well. My 4-year-old had her bucket and spade stolen.
No way. Who would do that?
Another parent.
No.
Yeah.
You got to the bottom of it. That's unbelievable. What happened?
She came over to me and she goes, my bucket, my spade. And I was like, what? And then I looked over and a woman had just grabbed it. And she was playing with her child. And I was like, and my mother-in-law was obviously up in arms about it. So I was like, right, I better go and sort it. And usually I would say, look, you know, it's nice to share your toys and, you know, that's fine. But then I saw that this lady had brought a tripod. So this was a bit of content creation on the beach. So a sort of mock-up of her with her son making a sandcastle. So I was like, right, well, I'll put a stop to that. But I brought, as a replacement for the bucket, a ice bucket so that she could then, her child could built the sandcastle with an ice bucket, you know. Anyway, so I go over and she's like shocked that I've asked for it back. And I said, sorry, you know. Anyway, so I said, here's a replacement. You know, you'll have a bigger sandcastle with that. And so she was like, okay. I walk back and then my daughter goes, but what about the spade? And the eyes welling out. I'm like, oh, God. I go back and I'm like, I'm going to need that spade too. And I literally yank it out of this child's hand. It was, yeah.
That is a story. Was this lady making content for TikTok or Instagram Reels?
It must
reels?
Have been something because... Wow. About 10 minutes later, she was posing in her bikini with her child in the background. It was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird content. But maybe there is a market for that.
Maybe. Well, speaking of content, you know, we've started to put snippets of these episodes on our social channels, on CNBC's TikTok and Instagram Reels, which is great.
Yep.
So people should check that out.
Definitely.
We've got a lot to catch up on, hence the chit-chat. But these... Now, for those of you only listening...
When you say these, for those who are only listening...
Only listening, what I'm holding in my hand now is a branded Beyond the Valley mug. We've just got them out of the box, actually. That's how new they are. And hoping in the coming weeks, maybe even next week, there may be some opportunities to get your hands on some of this merch. So I just want to tee that up as well.
Yeah, that's a nice tease.
But quite nice Good weight. Yeah, really good weight.
Good weight, good handle, holds all sorts of liquids, hot drinks, cold drinks.
And a good amount of volume, not those sort of mini mugs. Yeah. These can do everything.
Yeah, these are exactly. Yeah. Slick as well.
Very slick.
Really sold it there.
Yeah.
But before we get onto our main story, now that we've got through all of that, we've got to obviously hear your stat of the week.
That's right. So, stat of the week this week is $349.4
billion. $349.4
billion.
Okay. Later in the episode, we'll also be discussing crypto with Bitcoin's price on a seemingly unstoppable rise. Elon Musk claimed that his startup Neuralink has developed brain technology, which can now control a computer mouse just by thinking. We'll also talk about Sony, who are going to release a new pro version of the PlayStation 5 as it battles with near record low profit margins. And finally, how national enforcement agencies from around the world thwarted Lockbit, one of the leading hacking groups that develops ransomware. Sora as well. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the new AI tool. I know that sort of was last week, but I think it's worth us talking about later in the episode. But back to our main story. China's biggest chip maker, SMIC, has been manufacturing advanced chips in the last few months, defying US sanctions. Arjun, we talked about it in previous episodes, but why are microchips or semiconductors so important?
Because they're in everything we use, Tom. They are. In your smartphone, in your car, even in some home appliances.
In your dishwasher.
In your dishwasher or washing machine. They're everywhere. And they're crucial because they are key to the running of these electronic devices. They are key. They're the reasons our smartphones are as good as they are these days, or one of the key reasons anyway. And of course, there's other applications of a national security kind that many governments are concerned about, and that is the way that they can be used in military applications as well. And so that's why these very, very, very tiny components, electronic components, have become the focal point of geopolitical tension in the world over the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
In those 4 or 5 years, give us a little summary of kind of what, how we've got to where we are, where the US are needing to put sanctions or at least limit the access that China has to chip technology.
Yeah, so the context, I guess, for all of this was the Donald Trump presidency. And under that, there was a big shift in tone towards China, where him and his administration saw them in a more adversarial respect. And that stemmed from things like trade, but it also very much spilled into technology, and what was born was effectively now a new era of competition in technology. And what that meant was that some of these technologies that were seen as fundamental, as foundational, one of those being semiconductors, microchips, were sort of thrust into the spotlight, and their role and importance in the world was really scrutinized. And what the US effectively came up with was saying, we have a strong position in semiconductors, China doesn't, and if they do, we think that's a risk to us and our national security if China is able to manufacture the most advanced semiconductors because of the way they could be used in more military applications, because of the way they could be used with newer, more advanced AI, artificial intelligence technologies. And so what you've seen under the Trump administration and into the Biden administration is continued use of various sanctions, export restrictions on certain technologies to China, focused around semiconductors, stemming from this idea that there is this new sort of technology arms race going on.
When you talk about export restrictions, we're really getting to the nub of how the US can sort of curb their access, which is the supply chain, disrupting the supply chain for China to be able to access, you know, technology from around the world. That's the key to this, right?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The complexity of the chip supply chain has come under scrutiny. No one country sort of owns chips. Let's put it that way, put it quite simply. There's various parts of a chip supply chain, right? From the design of the chip all the way to the manufacturing, the actual making of those chips. But in between there, there's loads and loads and loads and loads of different processes and companies and technologies that are involved. So, for example, I'm going to simplify this right down, but, you know, a company may design a chip. You know, we take a company like Apple. They design their own chips. NVIDIA design their own chips. You know, our listeners would know these companies. But they don't actually make the chips. Those chips are then manufactured by various other companies. One of the biggest is Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. They are the biggest, most advanced in the world. Samsung is another company that manufactures chips. Intel is another company that manufactures chips. But those manufacturers also rely on other tools. They rely on the tools required to actually manufacture those chips as well. And the companies such as Apple and NVIDIA, et cetera, that are designing the chips require on design tools from other companies. Now, all these various companies in that supply chain are located around the world. Yes, the US has a very strong presence in things like design tools. Not as much these days in manufacturing. Asian companies, particularly, as I mentioned, TSMC in Taiwan, Samsung in South Korea, they have a very strong presence in manufacturing those chips. And then you've got companies in South Korea, in Japan, and in Europe who do everything in between. The tools, the machinery, the tools required for manufacturing, the design. And so that's the state of play right now in the semiconductor industry. The problem for China is it doesn't at the moment have companies that are strong enough or competitive enough with those companies in US and Europe and Japan, etc. It has its own manufacturer, chip manufacturer called SMIC, Semiconductor Manufacturing International Co. But it is generations behind the likes of TSMC. And we're going to dig into this, of course, in this episode, but TSMC and Samsung. So that's the state of play right now. And so when we talk about export restrictions from the US, it's very much about the US trying to stop American tools, technology, and the chips themselves getting to China. But it's also you're seeing US exert pressure on countries it sees as allied or like-minded to stop their companies from exporting tools to China. And that's the state of play right now.
There's also a company called ASML, a Dutch company, which I know you want to talk about a little bit more, but how are they sort of central to the problem all the issues that China may face going forward?
Yeah, it's worth just spending a moment on ASML before we come on to what's happening with SMIC in China, because ASML is a Dutch company. They make these things called lithography machines. And these are machines that use light to print patterns on silicon wafers. They're a very key part of the manufacturing of chips. There are two types of machines. Stick with me here. Because it's a bit jargony, but hopefully break it down. Firstly, there's immersion deep ultraviolet lithography machines, DUV machines. These are slightly older, and they're designed for the manufacturing of less advanced chips. And then there's the extreme ultraviolet lithography machines, EUV. They make the most advanced, or they are used to make the most advanced chips on the planet. ASML is the only company in the world that makes these EUV machines. It has effectively, you know, the market for this. Now, EUV machines are used by TSMC and others to make chips on a scale of say 7, 5, 3, and eventually 2 nanometers. Now, this nanometer figure you'll hear a lot in the chip world effectively refers to the size of the chips, or the number of transistors able to fit on the chips. The smaller the number, the theory goes, the more efficient. Energy efficient, the more advanced the chip is. So that's just a very basic breakdown of that. So these EUV machines need to make 7, 5, 3, and eventually 2 nanometer chips. For context, the latest iPhones, 3 nanometer chips, just to give you a context.
And SMIC have just, or reportedly developed 5 nanometers. Chips.
Yes, they're getting prepared. So
getting prepared. So that's where that's we go. In the pipeline, right?
Yeah. So
they're still, even though they haven't even confirmed or fully completed that.
Yeah.
They're still 2 nanometers away from what we currently have in our iPhone.
Yes, exactly. So just on the ASML point, ASML, under pressure from the US, has never shipped an EUV machine to China.
How big are these machines? Sorry, just give it.
It's about 200 tons, the size of a city bus.
Wow,
by one estimate. Yeah, they're big. They're okay. Big old things.
And they're producing these tiny little...
things. Well, they're part of a process to produce these chips. So SMIC has never managed to get its hands on an EUV machine. But they're now, as you mentioned, producing 7-nanometer and potentially this year 5-nanometer chips.
And what you're saying is that that shouldn't be possible, or that would only be possible with one of those machines that ASML have, which has never been shipped, or there's another reason.
The latest... So do you remember last year we did that episode on Huawei and its new phone?
The Mate 7. Mate 60.
Yeah,
sorry,
we're close. They'll probably do a 70 soon. The Mate 60. Mm. And we were talking about the chip in that phone. And, you know, our listeners should go back, listen to that. But we were talking about how it's a 7-nanometer chip produced by SMIC. Now the Financial Times very recently reporting that SMIC is setting up the 5-nanometer production line. So, yes, the question is how? How are they doing this?
But just to really hit the nail on the head, they would need one of these machines that ASML developed.
So many experts thought, yes, they would really need these machines. But what we understand from the FT, the Financial Times' report, is what they're doing is repurposing older technologies to produce these chips. That is possible. There's nothing wrong with that. It is possible. The issue that SMIC has, and this is what it comes down to. Yes, they can produce 5-nanometers, but what EUV machines give you is a newer technology and a much more efficient technology. So when SMIC eventually produces these 5-nanometer chips, if that report, you know, does come to pass, there's going to be two big issues. One, can they do it profitably? And two, is a question of yield. Let me just deal with those separately. Firstly, the FT reported that SMIC had to charge 40 to 50% more for products from its 5-nanometer and 7-nanometer production process than TSMC does at the same nodes. Therefore, it's a much more expensive chip. It's likely no one else is going to buy those outside of China. And so can they produce these profitably to sustain that business? The second part is yield. This is effectively the number of usable chips. Let's say you're baking cookies, right? And you bake 10 cookies, but like 6 of them burn. You've got a 40% yield, right? Only 4 of them are good enough to eat.
Quite a lot of wastage.
Same principle with chips. You could produce 100 and only 40 would be usable. That's no good. That's a waste of money, and that adds to that profitability picture. But also, it means your processes aren't efficient enough. And I think that's one of the challenges that SMIC might have with using older tech to do this lot more advanced cutting edge chips, and that's one of the big problems they're going to face now.
Subscribe to the Squawkbox Europe Express podcast. Join Steve, Karen, and myself, Arabile, in unscripted and dynamic debate around the day's top stories with first and exclusive interviews of the best in business and global newsmakers, original points of view, and instant analysis of the latest business news and key market themes. Get set for the day ahead. Squawkbox Europe Express podcast, now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Let's look ahead to the future for China's development of the latest chips that they can create. How do you see this playing out?
I think the problem is, and it goes back to the question you asked about supply chain, is the most dominant advanced companies in the supply chain are not in China, and they're not Chinese. Now, China has been, as a result of US actions, has been pushed to try to find some kind of self-sufficiency in the chip landscape. The problem is that their industry right now really hangs on a knife edge, because if there are further restrictions in place on the Chinese semiconductor industry, that could make that self-development that much harder, maybe that much longer. Now, that's not to say it will never happen, but it's going to take a lot of effort from the companies, from the industry, to figure out these parts of the puzzle. You know, China doesn't have an ASML equivalent, and so that's a big issue. There are other parts of the supply chain where they're working hard on, but that's going to take some time. And so moving forward, I think the Chinese chip industry is working very hard to try to catch up. But self-sufficiency is a very difficult goal to achieve. And I think they're going to struggle in some parts of the supply chain to match the quality and the expertise that of tools, machinery, whatever it is, that they can get from places like Japan, Europe, South Korea, and the US.
Just finally, ASML and their timeline, how far ahead are they compared to Chinese companies trying to do what they're doing? Like, how long have they been developing this really sort of advanced machinery?
Yeah, it's hard to quantify because, you know, one of the big issues, of course, with a lot of these sensitive industries, particularly in China, is it's very hard to find the information. Even if there's a Chinese competitor right now on the brink of cracking what ASML does, you know, that's something they wouldn't want to publicize just yet.
And when they do publicize something, why are they doing that as well?
Exactly.
Like any company, what's their motivation to put out that information?
Yeah, and you often see some of these sort of big breakthroughs, for example, reported first by state media because, and not just sort of homegrown state media in Chinese, but also some of China's state media that writes in English too. You know, part of that is an outward facing, hey, look, we are making progress. And then the stuff that's written for the domestic market is, of course, about sort of buoying up support for the industry and for homegrown products as well. Something that Huawei knows really well. It's seen a lot of sort of nationalist support from Chinese consumers to support, you know, the national, what is seen as a national tech champion there in China. But, you know, ASML is a long way ahead. And I think that.
Okay, we'll leave that story there. But for now, let's find out what else is happening in the world of tech. We haven't talked about crypto for a few weeks. Looks like the price of Bitcoin has gone through the roof. What do you put it down to?
Continue to rally. Two things. Big inflows into those exchange traded funds in the US, which we spoke about on a previous episode, the ETFs. Obviously, if there's big demand for ETFs, those issuers of the ETFs need to actually buy the Bitcoin to underlie the ETF. And because of the big inflows of money into ETFs, that's what's been happening. Buying is taking places. That's helped to support the price. Second big thing, again, we spoke about on that episode, the halving.
How far away were you? A few months?
April.
April, yeah, okay.
I think it's slated for, so soon. So April, halving, the rewards given to Bitcoin miners slashed in half, reduces supply onto the market. Historically, this has preceded bull runs to record highs. So
but
that's what you're seeing.
We're nearly at, you know, record highs. You know,
we're not far off.
We're not far off before the halving. But what we have seen, though, in particularly with the ETF announcements, is that these rises, these price rises, tend to happen before the actual event. That's what we discussed with the ETF, that the price had been already baked in.
That's right, yeah. So it's a slightly different scenario this cycle, I think, because of the ETF. That almost pulled forward some of the price rises that we may have then started to see now as well. So that's why we're pushing towards those record highs at the moment. Still a little ways off, but you know, the way Bitcoin moves, it could happen any second.
Sure. Okay, let's talk about Elon Musk. It's been a while since we mentioned him. Tell us a little bit about this startup, Neuralink. Where's this come from? How long has this company been about?
A few years. But it's sort of been in the background, and now things are really starting to pick. Would you like to control stuff with your mind? Because that's what this startup wants you to be able to do.
Yeah.
So Neuralink makes this I'm not sure.
I don't want the invasive, surgery in my brain if that's what's required.
Well, that's what this. So Neuralink has this device, and a robot arm has to insert into your brain. Because you need that precision that the human hand can't give you. And this device is sort of a what they call a brain-computer interface. Effectively, the idea is for you to use these neural pulses in your brain, those electrical pulses, and to be able to control external devices such as a computer mouse. And that's what currently Elon Musk is claiming. They gave the first patient this year this device, put that in them, and just this week Elon Musk said that patient is now able to control a computer mouse just by thinking.
That is mental.
Well, yeah, because it's done with his brain. So
but it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the stuff of sci-fi. It really is. For what it's worth, the aims stated by Neuralink are that this is the kind of technology that could do things like bring people's vision back, help people who, you know, can't move anymore.
Or have disabilities.
Exactly.
Or, you know, have, you know, lost limbs in wars, for instance.
Absolutely.
And then can't, you know, and if they're able to, you know, have that control and that, you know, independence back, then
that's amazing. If that comes to pass and that's the goal and it's able to be achieved, you know, if it's just so you can control your computer for fun, you know, that's a bit less noble. But but I think it is that it's for example, you know, let's imagine you're not able to speak, but you can control a computer mouse with your mind. Imagine the possibilities for communication for that person who can't speak, right?
Yeah.
And various other things. So there's so many great things that can happen. But that's where we're at the moment. That's Elon Musk's claims. You know, there's a long way between these trials, which have been passed, by the way, by the US regulator, which have been allowed. There's a long way from that to then the actual commercialization of this product. So that could take some time. But it's interesting to see if what Elon Musk says is true. It's a big step. And there's many exciting possibilities, I think, on the back of that.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. Let's also touch on Sony, which are going to release a new pro version of their PlayStation 5. Big news for the gaming world?
Yeah, so I thought I'd check in. This is according to analysts I've been speaking to. I thought I'd check in with a few of the sort of close watchers of Sony and the gaming world, and they all seem to think that a PlayStation 5 Pro is coming out this year. Now, PlayStation's about... just over three years old now, PS5, sorry. And so Sony executive on a recent earnings call admitted that it's entering the latter stages of its life cycle. Sony had to cut its forecast for sales of the PlayStation 5 in its fiscal year to the end of March because demand didn't quite live up to what it thought.
Didn't have as many sales as it anticipated.
Yeah, and look, we saw this with the PlayStation 4, the last generation. They bought out a PS4 Pro to try to reinvigorate sales. And why they might bring one out this year? Well, there's a big game coming out next year, and that's Grand Theft Auto 6, hotly anticipated, one of probably the most hotly anticipated game of this decade, is coming out. And so could make sense to bring a new piece of hardware out just as this game's going to come out too, and sync up and hopefully refresh some of the interest for Sony anyway on the PS5 and the console.
Do you think that the sort of underwhelming sales are because the competition is much greater in the gaming market now?
I think partly. It's an expensive console as well.
Right. How much are we?
I think it's about $500.
Okay.
It's not a cheap console. No. And, you know, they're still on track. They're saying to sell 21 million units this year. That's no number to be sort of sniffed at. And one of the things, bigger things, that's happening in the gaming industry is that they're trying to move to more of an Apple model, right? Where, yes, you sell the hardware, fine. But actually, it's the software where the real big margins are and where you can continue to keep players hooked. So, yes, you know, you might buy a PlayStation sort of 3 years ago, PS5, but you're still going to buy games. Like, you're still going to buy Grand Theft Auto 6 when it comes out. And you're still going to spend money on those games and all the extra services that you add on, such as PlayStation subscription service. And as we move towards the future, all these companies are talking about cloud gaming, this ability, which is effectively, you know, Netflix for gaming, stream games for a subscription. And that's a recurring revenue. So there is a shift happening in the gaming industry more broadly away from just we sell you our hardware and then we sell you a disc that you put into that hardware and then that's kind of it, to more of recurring revenue and subscriptions and various other things too.
We were also going to talk briefly about the quite recent news that national enforcement agencies, including the likes of the US and the UK and other countries, have been able to sort of hack into Lockbit's own website. tell us a little bit about LogBit.
Ransomware is this sort of virus, which effectively, once it infects your computer, it takes your files, locks them up, encrypts them, and then the gang who did it, or the attacker, says to you, hey, send me $1 million of Bitcoin and I'll give you files back. And that's effectively what it does. It holds your data for ransom and then they ask you to pay up to get it back. And LogBit is a ransomware as a service gang. And we spoke about this on the episode. One of the really interesting things that's happened with hackers is they're professionalized. They've got, you know, support staff. And now they've got this model where they're developing ransomware and selling it off. So if you went on the dark web and you're like, right, really fancy carrying out a ransomware attack today, you know, you go to one of these services and you say, I need some ransomware. You buy the ransomware and there's various different business models for it. And then you go out and carry the attack. The barrier to entry is a lot lower. And so that's what we know about LogBit. You know, their leader goes online on the dark web by the name LogBitSup. I think that's supposed to be like support, not like what's up. Yeah. I don't know.
You don't know that for sure, though.
You are right. It's very clever wordplay, I suspect. The group claims to be located in the Netherlands. In June, the US Department of Justice charged a Russian national for his involvement in, quote, deploying numerous LogBit ransomware and other cyber attacks.
Also, didn't it originate in Russia?
So, supposedly. So, the difficulty with cybercrime is because of the techniques they use to obfuscate their locations, you know, VPNs and whatever else, it's very difficult to attribute always an attack to a location, right? I could be in the UK, which I am, and sort of carry out cyber attack, which is in the French language, right? And you say, oh, mate, are these French hackers so these kind of things all add to the difficulty in really trying to nail down where they're from. There has been speculation that there are links to Russia, not necessarily the Russian government, but to people based in Russia. But yeah, that's what LogBit is. It's probably at the moment one of the most notorious ransomware gangs out there. You know, if these law enforcement agents around the world have managed to sort of fight back, that's a huge deal. Huge deal.
It was a good news story, which is nice to hear.
Yeah.
Because we did speak about the fact that these things are very hard to police, and, you know, the amount of hacking, financial crime that, you know, happens online is ridiculous. And the ability to put a stop to it is difficult. But, you know, clearly there is some progress being made, which is great. I just want to touch on Sora quickly before we go, the new AI tool created by OpenAI. I think lots of our listeners would have watched videos on social media that OpenAI put out. And essentially, it's a tool which you write 100 words describing a scene that you want the AI tool to then create in a video form. I saw the videos. I don't know if you've seen them, but they were pretty impressive.
Quite impressive. And scary.
Yeah. It's always, why is it always scary?
No one
likes change.
No one likes change. Yeah.
But yeah.
Very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Lots of great possibilities. You know, they were talking about things like generating video game scenes and various, lots of great things for content. Lots of risk, of course. Mm-hmm. Deep fakes, yeah. Made up videos, etc. And that's going to be the challenge here. Yeah. Super interesting. It was always going this way.
Yeah.
Maybe nobody thought it that quick, but it was going that way. Policing it.
Yeah. One thing I did actually want to mention from my holiday was on the plane, I watched The Creator. Have you seen it?
I've not, no.
Oh, Arjun.
Good.
Arjun. It'd be right up your strata.
Right.
It is. I actually really enjoyed it. You know, it's probably not for everyone. Quite a lot of action, but I'm sure you'd probably be into that.
Yeah.
Violence, basically. But it's got John David Washington in it, and he's the lead. But essentially, it's futuristic, sort of 2075, I think it is, and an AI, or supposedly an AI robot or system has set off a nuclear bomb. And that's the sort of start of the film, so I don't want to give anything away. But it's the start. Then essentially the West are hunting the AI, any AI, and they're very anti it. And Asia, or New Asia, as this new world, this new country has been created, is pro AI and sort of embraced it and lives alongside it. And this is more of the iRobot sort of AI that we're not talking about chatbots. We're talking about, you know, physical looking. They look like humans.
Yeah.
But the thing that really, you know, watch the film and we can talk about it another episode. But the thing that really I found interesting was how the movie examines the sort of philosophical debate around whether artificial intelligence can be truly sentient. And the line that keeps coming back is, they're not people, it's just programming. But I don't know, it really changed my thought process on AI. And when we talk about programming, we're programmed by our parents. You know, they're our creators. We've taken it in external, you know, forces that have sort of, you know, made you, Arjun, and your thoughts and your ideas on life. And why is AI any different? You know, someone programs their own thoughts, their own ideas into that AI, you know?
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
That's really interesting. No, it's a good thought. I feel like one of the big differences with AI is, but you're right, that analogy with humans does make sense as well, because, you know, the big warnings about AI is, what if AI goes off the rails? Yeah, you might teach it to be really good, but what if the training algorithm goes wrong?
And who's responsible?
Yeah.
But it would be the creator who creates the AI, ultimately. And, you know, parents are responsible for their children up to a point.
That's
you
it.
Know, but that, so there is always someone responsible for. Watch the film. I think you'll really, really enjoy it. Yeah. Before we finish, stat of the week.
The stat of the week was $349.4 billion.
I wanted to say the value of ASML, but I think maybe it's more the microchip industry.
Ish. It's the value of integrated circuits, i.e. chips,
right,
imported by China last year.
Okay.
Now, one of the interesting things about that, it's a huge number, right? $349.4 billion.
Yeah.
That was down 15.4%, the sharpest fall since their records began in the early 2000s. And that's partly due to the weakness of the global chip market last year, but also all those export curbs. What can you can't import stuff if no one's going to sell it to you, right? So that was interesting, I thought.
Okay, that is interesting. I haven't really done very well with Stat of the Week for the last few weeks, so if you could just make it a little bit easier next
year. Yeah, maybe next year.
Next year?
I mean, month. No, week. Wow. I don't know where I'm at. Like I said, next week we're going to be at the biggest mobile industry.
Well, you will be, but I'll be talking to you from there. So
there's going
to
be
very
some
exciting
things there. AI phones is the thing.
Yeah, so that will be the focus.
So my
probably
job between now and next week's episode and my expedition out to Barcelona is to figure out what AI phone means.
Okay, and that will probably be this central point of our episode next week then. Great. Very exciting. All right. That's it for this episode. But before we go, please follow and subscribe to the show and rate us. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, there may be something in it for you, maybe some merch in it. If you do want to email us, then the email address is beyondthevalley@cnbc.com. And we will respond to any questions or queries we have on the podcast. All right. Thank you, Arjun.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll be back next week for another episode of Beyond the Valley. Goodbye.
Beyond the Valley.